Okay, so I'm going to talk about electroweak gauge boson rapidity distributions at next to leading order. And this is work done with Babis Anastasio, Kirill Melnikov, and Lance Dixon. So I'll begin by first briefly giving some physics motivations for why we would want to compute this, in particular why we want rapidity distributions and why we want next to leading order. I'll then describe the calculation, and in the process I'll describe some new methods we developed for dealing with the real radiation contributions. I'll then present some results for LHC, Tevatron, and fixed target kinematics. And finally, I'll conclude. So first, why do we want electroweak gauge bosons, or Joule-Liam production, at next to leading order? So there are several proposed or current measurements in which this kind of precision is needed. And I've given here a few examples. So the first is the extraction of parton distribution functions. And this is typically done in, let's say, two different types of kinematic regions. The first is at low fixed target energies, where alpha S and therefore perturbative corrections are large. And the second, well, future, is at high luminosities, such as the LHC, where the statistical and hopefully systematic errors are small. Another application is as a luminosity monitor at the LHC. And the third is in the extraction of precision electroweak parameters, such as the W mass or sine squared theta at hadron colliders. All of these measurements here require percent level precision. In fact, they require percent level precision not just for occlusive rates, but for differential distributions. As an example, let me show you the parton distribution function extraction. So if I write the cross section for Joule-Liam, leading order, it's the product of a Q and Q bar distribution. And you can see that in order to reconstruct the functional dependence of the PDFs, I need to know both the mass, the invariant mass of the Proust boson, and the rapidity. And this is not specific to the PDF extraction. This is true for all of these applications I showed you on the previous transparency. We need distributions at high precision. Okay, so what actually goes into such a calculation? How do we actually calculate this at next to leading order? So first, let me just remind you of some of the basics. So the cross-section for Joule-Liam is written as a convolution of a hard scattering event with parton distribution functions. At higher orders, there can be additional radiation, these gluons here, for example, along with the produced boson. The rapidity is defined. This is standard hadronic center of mass system. And it'll be useful later on to actually have some covariant, Lorentz covariant form for this rapidity constraint. And to do so, I'll introduce this auxiliary variable U. It's the following dot product of partonic momenta with the vector boson. Okay, so this is the basic setup. Now, if I want to compute this at N and LO, what actually enters? So there are three basic contributions that appear. So there are the virtual-virtual contributions. These involve two-loop integrals with just the W or Z in the final state. There are real-virtual. These are one loop with one additional parton in the final state. And finally, the real-real contributions, which are just tree level, but with, in this particular case, two additional partons in the final state. So let me discuss each of these in turn, and I'll start with the simplest. So the first are the real-virtual. And if I go back to my picture on the previous page, you can see that these are the product of a one-loop integral with a two-particle final state. And these are simple. These can be done with standard techniques. The virtual-virtual, which involve two-loop integrals, they aren't quite so simple, but there's a well-developed machinery for dealing with these. They're well-studied. So one begins by writing down recurrence relations satisfied by these loop integrals. One can use Lorentz invariants and integration by parts identities to derive these. These then can reduce the number of independent integrals to a small set of master integrals. And once we have the master integrals, there are known techniques for calculating these, such as using differential equations, Mellon-Barnes, etc. So finally, we come to the real-real contributions. And these are actually the sticking point, and they have been the sticking point for, I guess, a long time now. So these are difficult and not well studied. Now, one might ask, can we use the techniques developed for multi-loop integrals? Can we use the reduction machinery? Can we use the differential equations? Can we apply these to phase space integrals? And the answer to this is yes. And the basic idea is to use unitarity to relate the two. So as a simple example of how this works, let's consider the production cross-section, an n-particle production cross-section. So it has the standard ingredients. It has some matrix element. It has some momentum-fixing delta function. And there are delta functions that put all the final state particles on shell. Now, the basic idea of this method is to use the following relation for the delta functions. One replaces the delta functions by the difference of these two propagators here with different I epsilon prescriptions, minus I epsilon and plus I epsilon. If I now, for example, look at the first of these terms and plug it into this expression, it looks just like a loop integral. I have some, you know, have some matrix elements, I have some inclusive integration over the momentum. It's just a loop integral. So the idea here is to map phase space integrals onto loop integrals, and the cut indicates this difference of propagators here. Now the point, the important point here is that none of the machinery I mentioned on the final, on the previous transparency, none of the reduction techniques, none of the differential equations depend upon this I epsilon prescription. So what one can do is one can make this replacement, one can then reduce, let's say, the first of these terms as a loop integral, one can derive some small set of master integrals, then one calculates the master integrals as actual phase space integrals by making this replacement backwards. Okay, so this obviously is for inclusive phase space integrals. There's no constraint here. I'm integrating over all the momenta. And so one might ask, can we extend this to differential quantities? And the answer to this is yes. And one can do it pretty straightforwardly. So here's the expression for a differential cross-section, the rapidity distribution in QCD. And so it's everything on the previous page, matrix elements, on-shell delta functions. Now I have some constraint on the final state phase space that gives me, that fixes the rapidity. And you see here that I've written in this covariant form. I've actually written it as some dot product in this variable u, which I told you about. So now since this is written in a Lorentz covariant form, I can again replace this as shown here. I can replace this by the difference of two propagators with different I epsilon prescriptions. And basically I can use the same machinery I told you about before. So what we've done here is we've introduced, in some sense, a fictitious particle. We've introduced a new particle described by this propagator. And we're using its mass shell condition to describe the rapidity constraint. So let me give you one more detail about the calculation. So there are singularities to extract, phase-space singularities. And these come from emission of partons either soft or collinear to one of the beam directions. And if I actually look at what this means in the matrix elements, there are singularities of the following form. U minus Z and 1 minus UZ. And we're here, I've introduced this threshold variable Z equals M squared over the partonic center mass energy. So this becomes singular as U goes to Z or U goes to 1 minus Z. Now, of course, this has to be regulated, and we want to regulate this in dim reg. And one can find that the phase space contains the following factor. Both of these limits raise to some fractional power. Now, as it stands, if I just look at this, the singularities in U equals Z and U equals 1 over Z, they overlap. As Z goes to 1, they merge. Now, it's pretty simple in this case to separate the singularities. One makes a simple variable transformation, remaps the limits of integration from 0 to 1, and one finds that the phase space completely factorizes. At this point, I can expand singularities in Y, or 1 minus Z, or 1 minus Y, using standard plus distributions. Now, in this case, it's pretty simple. It turns out that one can actually extend this technique to more differential quantities, and you'll hear about this in a couple of talks tomorrow. Okay, so this is an outline of the calculation. These are the major points. Now let me present some results. So let me first present Z production at the LHC. So this is production of Z on shell at the LHC. These bands here for leading order, next leading order, and NNLO represent the scale dependence between the mass of the Z over 2 and 2 times the mass of the Z. MRST approximate NNLO PDFs are used for this. The interesting point about this is how completely stable the scale dependence is at next to next leading order. You notice that the leading order result has a scale dependence of, let's say, 25 to 30%. The NLO is 5 to 6, but the NNLO is completely flat. And this is true, it's less than 1% for all interesting rapidity values. Now, just to be complete, let me show you the same plot for the W. So at the LHC, you can produce W minus, W plus. The rapidity distributions are symmetric, so I've kind of split this plot in half. Basically, the only point I want to make here is that the situation is the same for the W. The scale dependencies are, again, less than 1%. So now let me study the scale dependence in a little more detail. What I've done here is I've set renormalization and factorization scales equal. I've varied them together. So now let me change that on the following plot. So this is a plot of Z production at a specific kinematic point, zero rapidity. And there are, for both leading order, NLO, and NNLO, there are three lines on this plot. The solid line is basically varying renormalization scale and factorization scales at the same time. There's a dashed line, which is varying the factorization scale only. And there's a dotted line which is varying only the renormalization scale. Now, the only point I want to make about this is that basically for all of these, if I look at the range mu over m between 1/2 and 2, the scale dependence at n and low is basically 0. It's 0.1% to 1%. It's really flat. Now, it turns out that if I vary mu f independently over a larger range from 1/5 to 5 times the mass of the z, you can get a few percent variation. But basically, this is completely precise in QCD. This result is completely stable to higher order corrections. No, these are n and low PDFs. Yeah, these are the MRST ones. So now let me go and present a plot for the Tevatron. So let me just make a couple of general comments here. This is a direct comparison with the CDF data. So we've integrated over the Z-peak, just like the experimental analysis does. We've shown you leading order, NLO, and NNLO. And let me first make a couple general comments. First, the scale variations are about the same, less than 1% at NNLO. The corrections are a little larger, actually. The NNLO corrections increase things by about 3 to 5%. Now, what I've done here is you might notice that there are two thin bands. So for the first time here, I've introduced two different approximate NNLO PDF sets, one by MRST and another fit by Alokin. And you can see that these differ, and they differ more than the scale dependencies. Now, of course, at the Tevatron, the experimental errors are too large to actually distinguish this. In fact, I've even omitted an error. But this is quite an interesting result here, the fact that they really do separate these two PDF sets. So now let me study this in more detail at the LHC. So here's a plot of Z production at the LHC. And it's done now for two different PDF sets, MRST and Alokin. So let me describe these two sets. The MRST set basically fits to everything. It fits to DIS, it fits to Drellian, it fits to jet production. Whereas Alokin fits only to DIS. And the rationale here is that you can actually include NNLO corrections consistently for DIS. Now, you can see here, this is an NLO plot. These are NLO scale dependencies. You can see that these are completely undistinguishable at next to leading order. But now, if I actually go and include the NNLO corrections, you can find that they're completely resolved. And just to give you some numbers, the differences between these are about 2% at zero rapidity, and I think it's rapidity 2.5, they're about 8 to 9%. So this is possibly observable, probably observable at the LHC. So it really is going to be a strong constraint on PDFs. Okay, so let me present one more kinematic configuration. Let me present fixed target Drellian. So this is basically scattering on some proton target, center mass energy 40 GeV. This is interesting because it's one of the stronger constraints on anti-quark PDFs, and also provides some constraint on valence quark PDFs. But now, let me just show you what's interesting here. Here's the data. And if you actually compare this data to the NLO scale dependence bands, you really don't see a problem, right? The data perhaps is a little low, but the scale dependence is large. When we include the NNLO corrections, you see that the data and the theory separate. So this is an indication that one might want to go back to this analysis and tune the QBAR PDFs. So finally, let me go back to the LHC kinematics, and let me present some approximate results, or let me answer the question of, is it possible to approximate the full result somehow? So what I've done here is I've taken the order alpha S squared corrections, the order alpha S squared corrections, and I've split them into three pieces. Now, one can categorize pieces by the additional radiation in the final state, whether it's soft, whether it's collinear with one of the beam directions, or whether it's just a generic hard emission. And so what I've done here is I've plotted the ratios of each of these to the full order alpha S squared correction. So as you know, as required, all three sum up to one, so there's a normalization condition. And here's the hard emission, it's this dashed line here. Here's the soft part, it's this solid purple line. And the basic point I want to make here is that no possible approximate result, no soft corrections only, no soft or collinear corrections, really approximate the full result at all. You really have to include the full hard scattering events in order to get something reasonable for, let's say, Z production at the LHC. Okay, so that was it. Let me conclude. So I presented a calculation of the Drellian rapidity distribution at N and LO. And in the process, I've described to you a new method for dealing with real radiation at higher orders. So the basic idea is to map real radiation onto loop integrals. And once one has done this, one can apply the machinery that's been, you know, well tested and well developed for virtual corrections. One can apply it to phase space integrals. And as formulated in this talk, this is useful for somewhat semi-inclusive inequalities when we don't ask too much about the structure of the radiation in the final state. But you'll hear some talks tomorrow about extending this. So the physics conclusion is that the residual scale variations for Drellian at the LHC are now less than 1%. So Drellian is now a very high precision probe of QCD. Thanks.
Questions?
Frank, did you show us W production at the Teletron?
No, I did not.
Okay, you have that?
I have it somewhere. I don't have it here. Yeah. It's at Slack.
It's just that, I mean, you seem to suggest that the low energy data had problems with the anti-quarks, and W production is quite a stringent constraint on anti-quark distributions, the rapidity mm-hmm. distribution. It'd be interesting to see how that looks.
Certainly, the charge asymmetry is sensitive to the difference of U bar and D bar, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure what happens. But there is data. We haven't compared it yet, so I can't really answer. One thing, I mean, let me just tell you approximately what happens. The corrections are similar to this one, just so you see. But I don't think there was, we didn't compare it to data, so I can't really say.
Anybody else? Thank you.